financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am doing well, and I always love to see when we have a full house. We've got guests today.
We do have guests today. That's those lovely people that, if you're watching this on video, are in the corner of my screen here. And then Angela and Mike, and their last name is Torville. And I will tell you, just for curiosity's sake, they aren't married, at least not to each other. and we're going to get the scoop on them. But I want to say that they're both from Annie Mac Home Mortgage. And between them, they have, they don't look old enough to do it, but between them, about 50 years of experience in this business. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's surprising when you hear that number, isn't it?
Right, yes.
So I've invited them here today because we found some synergy in the way that we like to work with the public. And although no one ever believes us when we say this, it has to do with actually doing the right job, actually caring for the people that we advise. And then because of that, building a long career with lots of referrals, et cetera. So in order for people to get to know you a little bit, the way I've got to know you slightly, I would love it if you would share your family history with us and just give us some idea of how you are related and how you got into this business. Who wants to start?
Would you like to go first?
Sure.
Okay, glad to volunteer you.
Well, I met Mike's amazing son when I was 17 years old, and he wouldn't leave, so I'm here still. Mike has been a very critical piece of my career ever since the beginning. He was, I don't want to take too much of your story, but he was running countrywide offices over here in Western Mass, ended up, introducing me to another mortgage company, actually, and me in there. And that sort of started, the kickoff, I guess, away from, depository bank work and into the lending world. And I've never left that. So that's in a nutshell.
Well, so funny, because now I'm going to talk about her. We're going to talk about each other. Isn't that the way that works?
Sometimes.
But no, Angela has done a phenomenal job over the years when she first started as a receptionist, a loan officer assistant, a processor, loan officer, and now branch manager. So she's progressed through all different positions, given her a really wonderful perspective of the ins and outs of everything, is in a restaurant, behind the kitchen and out front. She's got a perspective of both sides of this thing. And where my experience comes in managing offices years ago, I used to manage the underwriters and processors and loan officers. That helps tremendously because you're not just a salesperson. You start to see what goes on in the back room, so to speak. And I think that does give both of us a very good perspective. And you talked about an approach. It's one thing to say, yeah, we really care about our customers. It's another thing to demonstrate it every day in what you do. And I think that's really what I think differentiates Angela. And I'm going to say, I left the business for a little bit. I was thinking about Angela had talked to me about coming back in. And honestly, it's her infectious, contagious enthusiasm that drew me back in. And I joined Annie Mac, and honestly, what we saw is this is exciting stuff. So yeah, here we are working together after all these years. So it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I just want to say Angela is also the mom of four children and a dog, right? Jess,
why not?
Our co-host Jess has how many children? Three?
Yes. And let me just interject for a minute. Okay. So the son would never leave. Does that mean you married the son and this is your
father? I did. Yeah, I did.
Okay. There we go. Okay. Got it. All right. Yep. So that's your dad-in-law. All right. Very cool.
So anyway, that gives you the background of being very human in a very inhuman environment of dollars. And that's what I think we share. So I asked you for some bullet points. I was like, hey, we could talk forever. We could have done a show just in our first conversation, right? And right. You sent me some brief bullet points. Like, we could talk about any of this stuff. And they ranged from credit tips and tricks to house hacking. Okay. And in the middle was like, you know, first time home buyers, VA loans, things that people always talk about. So I'm sure that we're going to do more than one show because there's just way too much information for us to cover in a show like this. But I wanted to ask you specifically, if you don't mind talking about, I definitely want to talk about first time home buyers and VA if we have time, but house hacking. Can you explain house hacking and teach us something about it?
Well, that's a show in itself too.
Well, it might be this one. Let's see.
Yeah, well, there's a few ways house hack. So we could follow TikTok and what they tell us to do. And it's buy a house, live there for a year, and go get another one.
Right.
It's that easy. It's not. So to just hit on where that falls flat, because on a daily, I overcome TikTok videos, and house hacking is a big one. Mm-hmm. And where it falls flat is when you're getting a mortgage and you're preparing and planning for your future accumulation of properties, there is no hack. It's planning. And so that's what we do. We sit with the client, we plan them. And the big thing that isn't discussed is the amount of assets you need in order to purchase that next property, as well as reserve additional funds left over after you purchase. Mm-hmm. And when I get into having to have 6 months of a mortgage payment in additional funds, it always falls flat. It falls flat. No one, and I come across lenders who prepare their clients to house hack and get that secondary home. They're not preparing them. We actually just saved one that we'll be closing in a couple weeks from bad advice.
Yep.
So house hacking is specific and personalized, I think, to you and your goals in the future with real estate. So that's just a real simple touch on what that could be.
Jess, you had a question?
I guess I don't really understand what house hacking is. Like, everybody would buy a second house if they had the money to do. How is that a hack? Like,
so it's all about the occupancy of the home. Are you going to live in it, or are you going to use it as an investment? And there's no real black or white law or rule or guideline that says how long you have to live in a home before you can move out and go occupy another. So when you're buying multifamilies, if you occupy that multifamily, you can put as low as 3.5% down or 5% down. If you do not live in that property, you could be looking at 20 or 25% down. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge difference. And so the hack is the least amount of money up front as possible to start to accumulate properties. And so it all comes down to occupying, if you will or not.
And there's more
to
it.
The hack is to occupy for a year and then go get another one.
But would you have enough equity in that house to be able to afford another whole mortgage? Like, most people, I would think, aren't able to do that unless you already have money going into it.
Correct.
Right.
So there's a lot of shortcomings with people that just listen to these quick house hacking things, mm-hmm. because you have to look at the income that you're qualifying with. And what income can you use? Are you filing your taxes properly? When I'm dealing with specifically a first-time home buyer who comes to me to house hack, first we stop and we say, why do you want multifamily? And if the reasons are because I want to own real estate, you know, I want to own a ton and let that be my retirement plan or how I make my living, we step back and we really look 5 to 10 years ahead and how can we position you now to do that?
Yep.
And then a lot of times we start to develop a team. And this is just how I consult. I do find people after they've bought in that first home come to me thinking they're going to get the other one and use equity within 12 months. I have 3 clients right now I had to get bad news to. And I have to tell them the sweet spot's 5 years if our homes keep appreciating like they are. So equity is a thing we have to consider, available assets and leftover assets, and also qualifying for 2 mortgage payments with your income. It's technical. It's specific. Everything's personalized to the person, and what they want to do and how we can move them forward. And it takes a team most of the time. So hacking is a very bad word. It's just a trigger word, I think. Mm-hmm. It gets your attention. The attention I like to have is a consultation and really plan, you know, for now in the future.
You can almost look at an obvious consequence of this too, right? If you don't live, if it's not an appreciating time, you're going to be over leveraged on properties with the maximum mortgage, the highest mortgage payment, and upside down, not on one, but on a few properties. And that's a dangerous That's right. position to be in without planning, like Angela said. So certainly it has to be thought out ahead of time. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
Be careful.
Oh, I don't have to plan for that. Yeah.
Let me think. Oh, I don't know, the 2007, 2008 housing bubble. Oh, gee. So there's lots more to this, too, about house hacking. You know, some people want to stay in a property for a year because they think they're going to avoid capital gains tax because it was owner occupied. Some people do this well using a 1031 exchange, but that takes exactly what Angela and Mike are both saying. That takes planning. You have to identify that property in advance. But that's a way to roll one property into another if they're like properties. We could go on for an hour about 1031 mm-hmm. exchanges, mm-hmm. but they have to be like properties and they have to be either identified within 90 days or there is a way to do it afterwards, but it's more complicated. But the point I think we're all trying to make is, you know, everybody is, you know, seduced by the idea of owning lots of real estate, especially in a scary market. And the appeal of a TikTok video that just says, this is really easy, just here's your hack. Okay, we're not talking about plastic covers for your bowls in the kitchen and here's a hack. We're talking about your life. This can drag you down the tubes if you do it wrong. Ruin your credit, put you in financial disaster, throw you into bankruptcy. I'm not trying to scare people. I'm trying to say, get someone who's qualified, who isn't telling you in a TikTok video that you just do it like this, no problem. And at least get their opinion before you run off and say, I got this great video, house hacking, look at how easy this is. You know, there's just too much of that going on. So thank yes. you so much for at least a tidbit of house hacking. And we will run out of time if I don't start moving to the next topic, but we'll go to break and come back, of course. But when we do come back, I'm hoping that we can talk about, maybe Jess will have a preference, but first-time home buyers or a VA market, whatever we have time to get through. And these can all be, this information can all be expanded later on and whatnot. But I ate up a little bit of time with your family story because I think it's important, particularly locally, if you're going to work with somebody, although you could be working with them from anywhere, to get some sense of who they are, not just what they do.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah.
Real quick, I just wanted to add on to what were you saying about the 6 months you need of mortgage payments? Is that in addition to the down payment you're talking about?
It's in addition to down payment and closing costs, correct?
Reserves.
Wow.
Reserves. Yeah. Reserves. So 6 months of reserves. Because there are people, you know, what if your tenant doesn't pay?
Right.
Right. So we're all, when we're qualifying, we're looking at risk. And are you able to repay?
Let's clarify that, Angela. Is that for your single home mortgage or is that rental properties?
These are when you start to accumulate multi-families.
Right.
But it seems like if that's the case, then even though you're putting down a smaller down payment, if you're required to have that reserve, it kind of washes, doesn't it?
It could, yes. The beauty of reserves is we can use retirement money. We don't have to, doesn't have to be liquid money for reserve. It just has to be accessible in a hardship.
Okay. Let's get your phone number, Francis. In the meantime, if people have questions.
Sure. They can reach us at 413-773-3333.
Or they can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we have guests today. Hi.
We do. Hello. We have Angela and Mike Torville from Annie Mac Home Mortgage. And just before the break, I was asking about VA loans and So I always found VA loans to be very interesting and very misunderstood and underexposed. And VA loans are pretty cool. So will you tell us a little bit about what that means at Annie Mac Home Mortgage?
Yeah, so VA loans are cool. So they are providing an entitlement to our veterans that have earned this. And what they've earned is to buy a home, a subsequent home with 0% down. They don't have to be first-time home buyers. They could be on their 10th property and use their entitlement. With that said, the other really cool thing about the VA financing is, you know, people basically know if you don't put 20% down, you pay what's called PMI. VA does not charge that to their military community when they're taking advantage of these loans. And they also have some of the best interest rates. So you couldn't get a more perfect storm of zero down, top tier rating, and no PMI charging. That means the lowest payment you can probably structure for someone. Now, when they're out there shopping, sellers are seeing zero down and they're thinking they're marginal clients. Most of the time they are probably the more qualified than my individual is putting 20% down. But because they're putting zero down, they're using government financing, sellers and realtors have been conditioned to think that that's going to be a sloppy situation and it's probably not going to pass the finish line. When I've never seen a VA buyer be marginal and not anywhere close to not being able to get their financing, I could get super technical on their financing, but they struggle in the market. We always say this. If you have offers in on a house, sellers are looking at them this way: cash, conventional 20 down, government, and then people have to sell their houses to buy the new one. That's sort of the flow of what's going to be presented to a seller. Yeah. So they're going to be at the bottom of the list, even if they have the highest purchase price offer or less request to the seller due to that zero down and it being a government loan. They struggle and a lot of times are passed up, unfortunately. I've specifically heard my clients get passed up because of VA financing, which isn't even legal to say, but it's a thing.
I was just going to say that should not be the case. In fact, it should really be the opposite. Hey, you fought for our country. You're in this benefit. Oh, I'm going to support that.
Right.
You're offering me the same price as everybody else and you have this financing. And I know that this financing means that you're going to end up with probably more cash reserves after the mortgage is done because you didn't have to put it down on the house. You got a better interest rate, so you're probably able to make your payment okay. Yeah, this seems like a good thing to me. Mike, you had something to say about this. I could see it on your face.
Well, it's a shame. It's too bad that the financing even has to be revealed. It's just too bad that it has to be because that would certainly change things. But just once they're aware, it's unfortunate that perception's out there.
That's a very good point.
People at a disadvantage, and it's too bad, but yeah.
Yeah, and we understand that. So what we've tried to do is create other strengths to their offers. Yeah. One being me maintaining a military housing specialist certificate. So I make sure I'm educated in those financing tools. I know how to speak the language, you know, and how to read. They have special pay stubs, you know, so it's a whole different world, VA. But I make sure I'm certified and I'm well known in my community to be a part of that community. Yeah. The other thing here specifically to Annie Mac Mortgage is we have a program where we're allowing our VA buyers to place actual cash offers. So now instead of them being at the bottom of that list of offers, now they're competing with the cash offers. So that was a huge reason actually for selecting Annie Mac to power our business, is to be able to give that opportunity to that community.
We talked briefly about that in our first meeting, and I was fascinated by the fact that a mortgage company was stepping up in a way. I'm not sure you're able to disclose that, but are you able to talk about how that works, how it is that you're taking a VA loan and presenting it as a cash offer? Because I was blown away by this. You don't see this with a big box. Yeah.
Right.
You don't, and you don't see it anywhere, quite honestly. And I'm a researcher, so trust me, I rejected this notion a few times before I said, wow, this is real.
Yeah.
So Annie Mac Mortgage has a affiliate called Annie Mac Cash to Keys, and it's an equity firm who is providing the cash for these offers. So what's happening is our VA buyers are, you know, being underwritten, of course, based on that financing requirements. And if they fit the appetite of the equity firm, then we are putting our cash up front for them. They're literally putting in cash offers. The idea behind it is that we're going to go ahead and complete that VA financing for them, and we will actually use that cash. But it's a guarantee to the seller, because regardless of the financing, we're going to purchase the home by the closing date. There's no extensions on these. So the sellers can be very confident that no matter what, when they sign on the line of our offers for our clients, they're closing. There's no mortgage requirements, and we're going to meet it.
Awesome. That's awesome.
And you might ask a question, wait, what happens if we do buy the house cash?
Mm-hmm.
Where's the VA financing come in after that? Right? It's an obvious question. But the borrower, mm-hmm. the VA buyer, mm-hmm. Has 6 months to fix whatever caused the delay, and then there's a VA closing after that, which could work well for everybody, because it, depending if they need just weeks or months, we do that secondary VA closing to consummate that deal afterwards. Should anything get delayed, at least the seller won't have to think about these delays. We just work that out, and there's really, as it comes down to it, there is no additional cost for this program to those borrowers.
Yeah, that I was going to say that. Yeah. It's not like somebody's yeah. making a big VIG right. in the middle, a big interest right. rate in the middle. This was something mm-hmm. somebody figured out how to do to give veterans a fair shake, which leads me to ask you, and I don't know the answer to this, so forgive me for putting you on the spot, but do you have any family members that are veterans and who may or may not have either had a story where they had a hard time buying a house, or they've been able to take advantage of something that helped them?
Well, my son's a veteran. He lives out in Colorado. The other son, not the one.
The other son? Yeah. Yeah. Your brother-in-law. Yeah.
Right. He lives out in Colorado, but he bought a house, but I don't think he bought it through VA.
Well, yeah. So my brother-in-law didn't use his VA benefit
yeah.
when he could have. And
right.
a lot of people who are entitled to this benefit aren't using it because of misinformation out there, and they feel like it's going to hold them back and not get the result of the home. And so they're saving their hard-earned money when they already worked hard to not put anything down, all because of, just wrong information.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
so, he didn't use it. That's a good example. But I have a great story with Annie Mac. I had a military family here in Massachusetts, and they were displaced. The family was separate, and they came back together, were living with family. They had homeless, I guess you could say, right? And I pre-approved them like you normally would with your VA benefit. So they were shopping with just a standard VA pre-approval letter, and they were getting rejected. And in one particular home, there were no other offers. And they did not want to do VA financing, the sellers.
That's just awful. Yeah.
And then we were done with our underwrite with the cash offer program. And the next house, they were under contract. They had their offer accepted cash. We closed in 3 weeks. They received yeah. their deposit back at closing. They got cash back.
Wow.
And they were in the low 6% interest rate. I mean, it couldn't have been... These people were really struggling, and the whole thing, PTSD, anger management yeah. courses, like we're living through a very highly intense emotional journey, and to be rejected. I mean, that, is a blow to anyone with someone with, emotional issues too, yeah. is tough. So it was wonderful to be able to close them in record speed, get their offer accepted with cash.
Yeah.
No fees, great rate, got cash back. I mean,
what is the resistance to accepting somebody that has a VA loan? Like, as a seller, do you get your money slower? I mean, I don't understand why there would be resistance.
Because they're putting zero down, so they feel as if the buyers aren't solvent enough to get a mortgage. You know, it's an intricate program, and not all of us loan officers are created equal with our knowledge. Okay. So your pre-approval letter is good as the person's name on it, right? So big broad range of lenders out here, not everyone knows everyone, right? Reputation's important. And also it's a government loan. So the VA does have a property standard. They want to make sure the home is healthy and safe for that military family to move into. So a big deterrent on those loans is peeling paint for lead hazard in here in Massachusetts. So if there's peeling paint, say, in the home, it has to typically be corrected before we can go ahead and finish the financing. So sellers regardless, would take that as...
I'm sorry, Angela, regardless of the age of their children?
Yeah, it's regardless. So, it's always worst case scenario.
So that's the difference, Jess. If somebody else were just buying the home and not a VA loan, and there was peeling paint and there was lead, and they had children under a certain age, you know, then there'd be a problem. But I think what Angela is saying is, if you're a seller and you've got one person saying, well, we're going to put 20% down, and another person whose loan is 0% down, you feel like the person with 20% down is vested. They're in it. They're going to lose that money if they don't do something. So you think that that's a stronger sale, when in fact that's not necessarily the truth. I have one quick question for you about VA loans that, and again, nothing we discussed, but are VA loans still assumable? Do you know the answer to that?
Yes. Yes, they are.
So, so I will just chime in here and say that what that means is, if you're out there, let's say the interest rates are high, they're 7-8%, and somebody who is selling a home had a VA loan at 3%, guess what you can do? You can assume their mortgage at 3%, and you don't have to be a veteran to do it.
Correct. You do have to go through an underwrite.
Yep.
You do have to qualify, and you're going to go through the servicer of that loan. So you would not go get a pre-approval from someone like me. It would be a very direct thing to that property and that seller and who their servicer is of their mortgage.
Okay.
So it's not a guarantee. You still have to put a down payment. I believe there are some fees attached to that too, in addition to standard closing cost fees. But yeah, if we're looking around 7% and you find a VA seller at a 2.25%, because they're out there, that would be a great deal.
Good
point.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons I said that is because when we're talking about people using their benefit and using that VA loan, that puts them in a position in the future to have a very appealing sales technique if they have a VA loan, right? They can actually say, look, you know, I'm selling my house for the same price as the next door neighbor, but my mortgage rate is at this level. And if you can qualify for it, you're stepping into a sweet deal. So,
yeah, that would be a great strategy if we turn into a buyer's market,
right?
Sellers. Yeah. I don't know how close we are to a buyer's market, but yeah, if I was a realtor, I'd be getting very well versed in that in preparation of a buyer's market.
Well, listen, in the next 30 years, while people are paying their mortgages, we're going to see buyer's markets over and over and over again, because that's what they do. They're cyclical.
We'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. Angela and Mike, how do they get in touch with you?
Okay.
Well, they can always text as best, I say, 413-302-2215. Just a quick little hello and we can connect. I like to schedule calls. So just know I'll give access to my calendar and we can get you on it.
Great. Oh,
that's great. Francis, what's your phone number?
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And as always, you can go to hugyourmoney.com anytime. And we'll be back next week with another edition with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Rahm on WHMP.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Rahm.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How's it going?
It's good. We're working on getting our setup all worked out, and I think it's good now.
It looks good. Your new studio looks good. I'm happy to have you here. Yeah.
All right. What are we talking about this week?
Well, can you believe we're talking about student loans again? It's a problem that just doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. So not just student loans in general, but student loans that are on any sort of income-driven plan, whether it's the SAVE plan or it's income-based repayment or any of these income-based plans, right? Now, for those people who might not be aware of that, when you graduate and you have a pile of student loans that you can't afford, one of the things that you can qualify for is some sort of income-driven plan on federal loans. That means that your payments are capped at a certain percentage of your income. Okay.
Okay.
So without being biased about this, one would think that sounds kind of fair, at least initially, right? That, you know, you can't pay at all and your options are, I can't afford this payment, so I go into default, mm-hmm. or I make some sort of payment arrangement. This is not any different than what people do with their credit cards or their mortgages or anything else when they have too much debt and they cannot afford to pay. Mm-hmm. Other than that, student loans are not eligible for a bankruptcy. Now, you know what I'm going to say. I'm not an attorney, and there are some cases where they might be eligible for bankruptcy. But in general, the school of thought is student loans don't qualify to be discharged in bankruptcy. So this is a difficult thing. I can complain for a long time, but I'll try not to, about how little education we give people when they're taking out these student loans, mm-hmm. about what they will cost at graduation. So people have an idea, boy, it's going to cost me $80,000, $100,000, $300,000 to get my degree. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they have a clear idea of not just what the payment will be on that amount of debt, although most times people don't remember that they were ever told a payment if they were, but what havoc that wreaks in your finances when you graduate. It seems like there's this idea that you go to school, you rack up the debt. You know, most people are trying not to work their way through school now, or parents are trying to have their children not work their way through school because they want them to focus on their studies. Mm-hmm. And I keep wanting to say at retirement, but at graduation, they are handed their student debt and said, you have about 6 months of forbearance, maybe a year, where you can kind of float and figure out what you're doing and go get a job. Mm-hmm. So the job will be entry level because you've just graduated. Even if it's in a high paying field, your job may or may not be enough to pay your student loans. Now, people would say, well, what do you mean they're student loans? Yeah, well, they still have to rent a place to live or buy a house, drive a car, or pay for public transportation. They need to do frivolous things like, eat, right?
Well, yeah, and also the timing of it, too. Like, normally, you know, when you get out of college, that's when you're going to find all that stuff because you've been living in a dorm or probably at home with your parents. I know some people have apartments or houses before that. But, yeah, it's like everything hits all at once when you graduate.
There's no doubt about it. And this is why so many students end up home on mom and dad's couch, mm-hmm. right? Because they can't make ends meet. So student loans are a big part of that. But what's going to get your last dollar? Is it going to be your groceries? Probably not. You're going to prioritize that, right? Your groceries are going to come first. You need to eat. You need to pay your rent. You probably need to make your car payment if you're driving a car to and from work, right? Yeah. But the last thing on the list is your student loans. Mm-hmm. And so if you can afford them, that's great. You start making payments. If you can't, you make payment arrangements. And those payment arrangements, if you're fortunate enough to be able to qualify for these payment arrangements, are based on your income. Now, so your income-based payments can be as low as zero, believe it or not, and still qualify for public service loan forgiveness program.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
How does that work? So, that seems weird.
I'm telling you, the whole thing is bizarre, all right? But When we're talking about public service loan forgiveness, you know, that's the one where you work a job that qualifies at some nonprofit organization, hospital, whatever, and you work for 120 120 payments of your student loans. Most people say 10 years, but they don't have to be consecutive. You can come in and out of the program, right? But when you reach 120 payments working for that organization, if you have filed, oh, this is such a bone of contention for me. If you file the proper paperwork every year, which not only requires the application with the government, but something from your employer, all right?
So it many has to be people, refiled every year? You can't just do it once?
Every year.
Okay.
And so many people get to the end, and we've seen it happen. We've done shows about this, where they get to the end and they learn, even though they've worked all that time, they didn't qualify because they didn't file that the proper paperwork. And all their loans came falling back on them. Okay. But back to the point, if you file all this proper paperwork, even if your payments are zero because your income is that low, when you reach 120 of those qualified payments, your student debt will be forgiven. Okay. Now, I gave you that background to tell you this. What happens if you cannot file the application?
Mm-hmm.
Your student loans don't get forgiven. And what happens when they don't get forgiven? You owe the student loans, you owe the penalties, you owe the interest, you owe those student loans.
Which puts you back. Is this for everybody after 120 payments? Like everybody gets it forgiven if they fill this out how they're supposed to, or is it specific loans?
Only it's specific loans with the government, right? Your private loans are not eligible, right? These are public loans, federal loans. It's a federal program. And it's if you work in certain jobs that qualify. And this is all on the government website. You can go to studentaid.gov and catch all this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what I see happen here in the office is that many times people will take a job for a nonprofit organization because that job qualifies them for 10 years, if they keep doing for 120 payments, for their student loans to be forgiven. And if their student loans are very expensive, that has real value to them.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying here, and if this sounds a little bit like what we talked about on Social Security, where women are the caretakers and they put less money into the system and it ends up coming home to roost at the end, this is the same sort of thing. If you take that lower paying job, gambling that your student loans will then be forgiven, thereby getting a $300,000 bonus or whatever it happens to be as a metaphoric term, right? Then you have got less earnings, right? You're putting less into the system all across the board.
Mm-hmm.
If your student loans don't get forgiven, you have penalized yourself, or you have been penalized, right? By trusting that the government program is going to work and that this is what the rules of the game are.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the rules. I check the website. I fill my forms out every year. I'm good. I'm on track.
And that's assuming that these government jobs are lower paying than a regular job in that field?
Yes. And most of them are. Most of them are, you know, you're sacrificing something.
Right.
Not always, but you're sacrificing something for that position, in part because you want to give back to society, maybe, right? That might be part of your goal. And in part because you're counting the dollars. You're saying, hey, I can take this job. I don't have to make my student loan because I'm on IDR, income driven repayment, and my income is low enough that my payments are zero, or they're at least a percentage of my income. So this makes my payments affordable right now. And it gives me the promise of when I've made 120 of those payments, as long as I file my paperwork every year and my employer files my paperwork or signs my forms, then the rest of my loans will be forgiven. Now, I know a lot of people who are gambling on this, a lot of people.
Well, it seems like it would be worth it if, you know, you make sure that you do everything you're supposed to do.
Yeah. And how do you know what you're supposed to do? Oh, you check the government websites, right? So what is the problem right now is not so much that the plans, well, it might be that the plans aren't going to be upheld, but we don't know that yet. And therein lies the problem. We don't know much right now. There is a huge lack of information. And that lack of information is causing about 8 million borrowers, at least 4.5 million with these repayment plans, to wonder what the heck is going on with their student loans.
Yeah.
And they're in limbo. Now, a lot of these people have to rely on filling out these forms every year to, as I said, to qualify for public service loan forgiveness. Mm-hmm. But other people just rely on the forms because they have to fill them out every year to remain in a payment program.
Okay.
Now, if your student loan payments are $1,000 a month and you can't afford that,
yeah,
and your payment program is $200 a month and you can afford that, if you can't file the application, unless the government does come out and say, which they've not yet, if they do come out and say, we're going to extend the timeline for this because we've taken down the applications, a thing we'll talk about here, then you don't know what's going to happen. Your loans could retroactively, basically, right? They could just go back to, sorry, here's your $1,000 payment. And by the way, you know, your interest, your penalties, things like that, that might have been forgiven under one of your payment programs or might have been put into forbearance or deferment, those might come due as well. So people are in a frenzy about this. So let me just say that, so we film these shows and then they air and sometimes they're out of sync a little bit. So when we're recording this, today is, what is today? March
11th. Let's
see. March 11th. Thank you.
Yes.
March 11th. And on the Friday, just a few days ago, 25 Senate Democrats wrote to the Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon, asking for some more information about this. What did your agency do? Now, what is your agency going to do? So what they've done is in February, they made a decision to pull this application down off the website. When they pulled the application down for income-driven repayment plans, mm-hmm, that also prevented millions of borrowers from filing that application for other kinds of income plans, like the repay, the save, all these sort of government, you know, we love to give them these acronyms, all these plans. So what happens is that those payments will suddenly balloon if those, mm-hmm, applications can't be filed. So 25 Senate Democrats wrote and said, could you just give us more information? As
did
far
they
as we
also
know,
write, P.S. Can I meet the rock?
Did they also write what?
Can I meet the rock?
Well,
thank
maybe
you for
more.
Getting my joke. Thank you for understanding my joke.
Oh, yeah. Maybe more than that wrote for that. Who knows who's interested in this? But certainly if you have a student loan or you're a parent with someone with a student loan, you're interested in it. So the thing is that, you know, borrowers have relied on these payment programs for decades. Many of them are really close because they've been around for decades, right? Many of them are really close to having their loans forgiven. And so this is considered to be a very sudden move and a fairly reckless move with all these borrowers, millions of borrowers in the mix. And all people seem to be asking for at this point is some information. You know, I recently flew somewhere and I was reminded when we were in a very turbulent area, you know, the plane is going up and down sideways and people are just hanging on going, wow, this is a lot of turbulence. And I'm muttering under my breath, okay, a little communication would be nice, you know.
Yeah.
Could you just tell
exactly
us, hey, this is temporary, besides, oh, there goes the seatbelt sign, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all we're saying here is a little communication would be nice, right?
Yeah.
We don't necessarily need to care about the seatbelt sign, but we do need some sort of communication. So that's what we're hoping for here. You know, we can talk a little bit in the second half, of course, about, you know, what's happening, what you can do in the meantime, how long this might last. We don't know, okay, but we'll talk about that.
All right. In the meantime, let's get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
Or you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, and we're talking about the dreaded student loans.
So if you're gambling, then you need to think of it as a gamble. You need to have a plan B. I don't like saying that. I would prefer to say, look, we voted this in, that's how it goes, and everybody gets grandfathered. But if only life were that simple. But it's not that simple. So what we're talking about here is a lack of information from the Department of Education.
Well, it might be a lack of education too. I'm just saying.
Is that a Freudian slip? I don't know.
I'm gonna get us banned here. Okay.
A lack of education from the Department of Information. I like that. Yeah. So that'll get quoted somewhere and I'll be in trouble.
Yeah.
Anyway, they pulled these applications in February. All right. Mm-hmm. And so they shut down their online application portal, which means that the income-driven repayment plans can't be recertified. People can't do their applications. So, and those are plans that are based on earnings, right? But there are also other plans that this hindered, such as, let's see, income-based repayment, income contingent repayment, pay as you earn. All right. So those borrowers, there's one piece of information that has come out from the Department of Education so far. One piece. And here it is. They can still request a normal forbearance from their servicers, but interest will accrue while their loans are paused.
What does that mean in real people language?
That means you can still send a paper application in saying, I can't afford my payments, and ask for forbearance, which means a stay of execution on your payments in real people terms, right?
Okay.
But the interest on those loans will continue to accrue. It will continue to amass. And so for all that time that your loans are paused, here's another problem we're talking about. For all the time that those loans are paused, if they are unsubsidized loans, which accrue interest, that means that interest is going to be on there. So by the time your loans come off of the pause, you will owe what you owed plus the interest.
Oh, the interest, yeah. And that kills you.
It does really harm people because it's compounded interest, right? It's not like, hey, if you owed $100,000, you owe $3,000 for the year at 3%. It continues to build, right? Okay. So when they stopped, so there was a thing that the Washington Post reported that said the Education Department sent out this memo to the student loan servicing people. So these are people who are either helping people, you know, figure out how to pay their loans, or to the people who are paying them themselves. But they sent it out saying, stop accepting or processing any pending IDR, income-driven repayment applications, for 90 days. So they not only pulled the application down off the site, they sent a memo out that said, hey, stop, right here. No more processing or accepting any applications for 90 days. There were about, guess how many applications were in process at that point, Jess?
I mean, it's probably gonna be hundreds of thousands, right?
1 million.
Wow.
About a million applications in process. So these people are really stuck in limbo. They have filled out their form, but they don't know what's happening with their form. And nothing is happening with their form. So, boy, you know, I don't know what else to say about this, except that this reaction of taking down the application off the website and sending this memo was in response to the federal appeals court, right, ruling which upheld and extended or expanded Biden's SAVE plan, that S-A-V-E, SAVE plan, which several Republican-led states fought against. They actually sued to end that, right? So we have this lockhorn of Republican-Democrat, Republican-Democrat. We have Republican-led states saying, we don't want those programs, stop doing that. And we got Democrats writing letters saying, we need information here, right? I don't care if you're an alien, and I don't mean an illegal alien, I mean one from outer space. This is not kind to students, okay?
Right.
On either side. You have to, if you're not going to give them these payment programs, at least tell them you're not going to give them these payment programs.
And there's not even a timeline either where they say, like, look, we're getting everything in order. It's a new administration. In 3 months, we'll have an answer for you. It's just kind of open-ended.
Well, that's what people are asking for. They're saying, could we get some basic information? How long will this last? Who will it affect? What can we do in the meantime? And that doesn't seem to be forthcoming at this point. Now, here's one of these things you can say that isn't political on either side. It just is. When the access to these online applications were blocked, mm-hmm. it blocked all income-based applications, which were not included in that litigation. So there's litigation, there's a federal appeals court ruling, there's people that are upset about that, and so in response, they pull down the application, mm-hmm. which was for the SAVE program, but it was also for all those other income-driven repayment programs that I just listed, income contingent, income-based, and the pay-as-you-earn. So how is that fair to those people?
I was going to say before we went to break, and you kind of brought it up in this half, this is all going to end up in court. So at least we know the judges won't be unemployed because there's going to be so many court cases in regard to this, I can imagine.
Well, it's still in court. And there's only one group I can think of that is okay for the moment on income-based, and that's the SAVE people, right? Biden's SAVE plan, if they currently have their loans in an interest-free forbearance plan, while the litigation continues, they don't need to update their income until 2026.
Okay.
And I'm checking, if you're watching me read, I'm checking my notes here. There was a great article on Yahoo Finance where I got some of this information, and it's they did a great job explaining this. But what they're explaining is what I'm explaining too, which is we can't explain anything because we don't know.
Have the information. Yeah.
This is 30 minutes of empathy to the students because I know we have too much empathy, right? But I feel bad for students who are trying to play by the rules that were given to them.
So if you have someone calling you who's a student who's in the middle of this, what's your advice? What are your tips for them? Can you have any? I mean, you don't have any information.
The best tip I can give you is to go to studentaid.gov, who is always in the know, right? And they had one tiny little memo at the top that just said, I forget what it was. It was small. But I think it said, that it's paused for 90 days. And I don't know, if you go to studentaid.gov, you'll find it. But it wasn't much. It was, that's the thing that I'm thinking about that was stop accepting and processing applications. I think that's what the memo said. We can't accept or process for 90 days. But, that was February. 90 days will come quickly. And what a mess. I don't know. I don't know if these loans are going to be, you're going to have 3 months worth of interest on your unsubsidized loans that will be on there. I don't know if the government will come out and say, no, we just extended it and you're not going to have to pay any of that. And we're just picking up where we left off. I don't know if they're going to come out and say, what do I say? We don't care that the federal court upheld this. We don't like it. And so we're not going to do it.
I wonder if this will deter to continuing education. Like if you're looking at all of this, or your parents are talking about it and you're in high school right now, do you want to go to college and take this all out and know that you're going to be in limbo like this? So does it deter that at all? I wonder if that goes into thinking, or even when, I know you've gotten talked at schools and stuff before, but even when the counselors are talking to kids about this stuff, they don't have any information really to tell them.
Well, I mean, you always bring up the most logical point. I know you tell me you're not an expert in finance or whatever.
I'm just thinking from a regular person,
But that's the point. The reason that you make a great co-host is because you think like a regular person, and you remind me when I'm too technical, or when there's something like a mom. I mean, you're a mom.
Yeah.
And you think like a mom, right? And you're a news director. You think like a news director, right? So, I think it is very difficult. If this were to go on long term, I think it would have an overlying effect, right? Or an underlying effect. But I think even short term, if this is affecting you, if this is happening at the time that you are trying to fill out your paperwork,
right?
It's affecting your decisions right now. And people just don't know what to do. And in the midst of all of this, we have all of these firings going on, across the board. And so we got people who are working in organizations that are government related, who are in public service loan forgiveness, who not only can't file their paperwork, they don't know if they're going to have a job, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry,
but
yeah.
People to process the paperwork if it starts back up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, what about the people that have been fired that are now filing suits, hoping they're going to go back to their position? How are we ever going to unravel all of this? What a mess.
Yeah, it really is. And we talked about this a little bit at the beginning, but it is changing like all the time. I'm just thinking about on a different topic, the tariffs. That's like every hour it's something different. So, I mean, I guess with the Department of Education is like you're saying, at least some information would be better than nothing. Like we're really not getting anything right now.
Well, you asked me what can I say to people, and typically I never give you a problem without giving you a solution, and
right.
I can't give you a solution yet, but what I can tell you is I'm staying on top of it. If you want not to be glued to a television set or have studentaid.gov on speed dial, you know, then you. Does anybody use speed dial? Is that a real thing anymore? You know what I mean? If you don't want to have their site open all day, then, you know, you can reach out to us and we will have the skinny as soon as it's out there on whatever can be done, because we help people with student loans. It's part of what we do. Student loans are debt, right? And so between the budgeting and the student loans and the retirement portion, we help people with all of that. And I don't like coming to the airwaves and saying, I don't have a solution yet, but I do want to say that, you know, we are here to help, even if it's just to tell you, hey, when we get news, we'll reach back out to you.
And right. So and that, at least you're like on top of scouring all the different sites and different places to be able to find the latest to be able to give people. I mean, there might be people out there that didn't even know that these applications are on pause for 90 days.
Yeah, well, there really might be a lot of people probably, right? I mean, there's a million applications on pause. That's not so many when you think about the population of the United States, but it's a million people still.
Right, right.
You know, not all of them are tuned into the television or paying attention to this. And it's not, I don't think this story is at the forefront. I mean, you're not turning on the TV and bam, student loan thing, right? I always try to bring things that maybe you haven't heard about or that will affect you. And this is one of those times. So I hope that even telling you, hey, this is going on, bringing awareness and saying there needs to be some resolution. You want to write to your congressman? You want to check with anybody? You can do that and see what you can do to find out about your own situation and maybe help some others as well. And I certainly hope it gets resolved soon. Yeah.
So interesting. All right. Well, let's get your phone number if anybody has questions, and I'm sure there's a lot of questions.
I'm almost afraid to give it. Okay, 413-773-3333, and I'm kidding. You can call us anytime.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com anytime as well. Thank you so much. We'll
Thank
be back
you,
again
Jess.
Next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Have a great week.
Thanks, you too.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.